Crazy Dogs, swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper manning. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm, if your work be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. But Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Avast, me hearties. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network, WPRPN. Live streaming today from just off the shores of South Korea's Weed is Evil, alcohol-drenched peninsula, you're listening to what we imagine will strictly be a naturally high episode number 72 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. This week, we welcome Augie Nost back to the Robin Hood. Longtime listeners of the show will recall episode 18 of Pirate Radio Podcasts and our mind-blowing conversation from May of 2016. Ranging anywhere from pirate radio politics, the secret space program, and mysteries of the mind, we'll likely revisit a number of issues discussed last year while exploring any series of intriguing new subjects as well. Emigrating as a young man from Norway to the USA back in 1972, Augie spent many years working as a commercial pilot while also managing to co-found Minnesota's Arrowhead Airways in 1975. A candidate for Congress back in the fall of 2000, Augie can be heard these days streaming live most Monday mornings via Beacon of Light Radio's The Universal Consciousness Show. And from what Augie tells me in the lead-up to things here, the pre-interview to episode 72 of this week's Pirate Radio Podcasts, it has been around and in place now, I guess, for the past number of months. Your show, is that not correct, Augie? You've launched it and been able to interview a whole host of people over the last little while.
Yeah, we have, hello there. We have been doing it for about 6 or 7 months, and we've had an awful lot of fun with it. We have gotten some really high-powered names, and I'm having my time of the life. I'm having a great time with it. And first, I have such a good co-host over there. She's phenomenal. We try to make it an international show, because between the two of us, we can communicate in 9 different languages. So we invite people in the chat room to come in. If there's difficult for them in English, then they can ask questions in their own language, and we will answer them in their language. So this works out great.
We're talking there 9 languages. English, German, Norwegian. What are the other 6 we'd be looking at?
I'm doing my best on English, and speak Norwegian, Swedish, Danish, German, and I wouldn't starve to death in France. But Diana, she speaks also Spanish and Italian and German, French, English, and Romanian. And I think there's another one, Dutch, I think. I'm not sure.
And the topics you cover, of course, many esoteric, metaphysical subjects, a lot of ufology. I was going through the archives there that you have up on SoundCloud, actually just last night. And, well, why don't you fill people in a little more, and then we can maybe get into your biographical kind of your backstory as far as, your history in the States and whatnot is concerned. But yeah, if we could just first hear a little bit about the kind of people that you're looking for when you, you know, talk to folks, on your show, who is it typically that you like to, come on board?
Okay. Yeah. I can hear some bells behind here. I had some other music going in, and it wasn't us. So Anyway, you know, we are covering a lot of the paranormal and try to get the whole gamut of it. Besides that, we are very big on the mind, and we go into health-related issues. I've done several radio shows on my own about how to reverse the aging process. Because, you know, in 2009, the Nobel Prize was given for the discovery of an enzyme that reverses the aging process, and nobody seems to know about it, and we explain how, because it's fairly simple. And we go into other health issues and how to stay healthy all the time. And besides, we are getting into the technical part of the paranormal. And that is maybe how a UFO might work, or how to build a UFO detector, which I did when I was about 12. And that thing worked great. You can find it on my website. There's drawings of it there. And also what's on the moon and what's in the universe, what's out there, what we can see. In fact, if you go to my website, on page one of the picture gallery or the photo gallery, you can see some of the artifacts on the moon. There's a pyramid up there. And I have also a 2-mile-long cigar-shaped ship floating across the surface of the moon, throwing a shadow on the ground. And this is a NASA print. So, you know, you can't really argue with it. And there's many other really mind-blowing pictures on the photo album there at my website. That's www.aage-nost.com. So have a look at it and see what you think.
We have taken a look at it. In fact, you've got such a, 40, 50 pages of photos, so a very extensive album and archive, what some might like to refer to as a dank meme stash, although I'm not sure, not too big on the memes, just more the photos. But let's come back around to some of these points that you hit on here just a little later down the road. I think what's probably most important for people to hear about then, I know you talked about this, the UFO detector technology and device that you put together as a child of 12 years old, not something that most 12-year-olds typically manage to conjure, but I guess it was something that you were successful in doing.
Yeah, so simple. It was so simple that everybody could do it.
Like I said, we'll maybe hit on that in just a few moments, but let's hear a little bit more about your background, kind of biographical material and backstory for those that aren't too up to speed on things. You emigrated to the U.S. in 1972 from Norway. And the purpose of that, I guess, was to obtain your pilot's license?
Yeah, I grew up on a farm over there. At the age of 25, I left the country to come to the United States to go to a flight school. I did that. I spent 1 year in flight school, and I got a commercial pilot license and an instrument rating and instructor rating for both multi-engine and single-engine and instrument instructor ratings. And that was pretty much all I could get there. And it took me a year, and then I started working for other people. I worked for 3 years for the flight school to get more experience. And then me and a partner started a flight school in Minneapolis that grew into an international air taxi and an air carrier. But, you know, the thing is that when you work too much, it doesn't matter if you own the company, you still burn out. So after I flew for 23 years and now I don't fly much anymore. So I do other things. I do like these radio shows and investigate the mind, and I am having a lot more fun with that. We're just now putting out also a video documentary on all the things you are not supposed to know about. That's coming within a week or two or so.
Yeah, in fact, that was one of the things that we were hoping to talk about here today. So let's maybe get into that a little more. I think there's a bit of a ET or UFO angle to things.
Oh, absolutely. It is that, and we go into Solar Warden. We are the secret space program and depopulation of Earth, which is Agenda 21. And for those of you that don't know anything about it, I recommend Google it. You need to know what their plan is for you, because they want the population of Earth to be down to around 800 million, and now it is 7.4 billion. So what are they going to do with the other people? Well, read more about Agenda 21 and you will know what they have in mind for you.
Yeah, Agenda 21, or I think now what is more commonly referred to as Agenda 2030. I'm not sure why they...
That is correct.
They tweaked that or not. But let me just point out one thing here. I know you said Google it. Alex Jones loves to say just Google it. But here on the Robin Hood, it's one thing that kind of we're a little sensitive to, because what we prefer to do is DuckDuckGo it. You know, that's our search engine of choice, simply because they stand for the principle of privacy, really, and that they're not into data mining. You know how it is. Yeah, DuckDuckGo, you've never heard of DuckDuckGo?
Oh, yeah, I heard about them. I don't think I ever used them. I just don't know anything about them.
Well, I'm not an expert on the matter, but at least on the surface of things, they promote themselves as a search engine which advocates and embraces the principle of online privacy as best they can. So no data mining at all whatsoever. It just makes it a little more kind of challenging for the NSA and others. You know, they've actually got to work, if they want information on you, work out a little more versus some other outlets and platforms like Facebook, where pretty much everything is just kind of freely handed to them. No questions asked. So... Okay, well, hey, I'm not sure if there's more. So it's a couple more days, I guess, and you're expecting to see the official release of this document?
That'll be probably between a week and 2 weeks, because we're finishing up another website, and that could take me a week. And then we will be putting it out there. So, and I will make sure that you get some of that information when it's available to me.
Yeah, we saw the trailer and were immediately drawn in. So I think that the title or the name of the documentary is Diana and Me?
That could be. There is two or possibly three more trailers being put together right now as we speak. And there may be different titles on that. And it may be slightly longer, maybe about 2.5 minutes instead of what it was. So there's going to be more.
All right. Welcome aboard, Joe 333, and good to see Pirate Joe, one of the Pirate Joes, joining us here today. Hopefully have Pirate Joe Eminon drop by. We've also got Delcroix wanting to participate in today's live streaming conversation. He's got a couple little, emojis, I guess is what they're called, have a movie camera is one of them, some cool shades, and a big thumbs up. So thanks, Delacroix. This is the first time I think we've seen him drop by and want to participate in our live stream YouTube chat.
That's the way to do it.
Friend of yours or just some random character from out of the
stratosphere? No, I don't know.
Okay. So we have a whole range of talking points and issues that we are hoping to cover here. Once again, just in the lead up to things here, the pre-interview, because we like to do our homework with each of our shows and try to get, as clear a picture as possible as far as our guests, history and just all of what they've been able to produce over the years. I did a quick DuckDuckGo search for Augie Nost. One of the things that came up, and I know, once again, we address this in the lead up to things here, and you said it was fine to talk about here on the live streaming end of today's presentation. So,
sure.
One of the things that came up was a mugshot of that really kind of that sent me for a loop. And I was looking through the police report that they had there on you, and it's almost seemed like they were trying to paint or portray you as some sort of cult leader.
No, I don't know what they wrote in there, but most of what they wrote, they just kind of made it up anyway. This is something that happened right about the time in, right after when I ran for Congress in Arizona.
Fall of 2000, that's right, yep.
Yeah, it was way back then. Me and two other people, we had a radio station, and we were trying to educate people on constitutional issues almost entirely. Constitutional and talk radio. And whenever the city went and did something wrong, violated the law, we jumped in the middle of it and exposed the fraud. And also, when I got on the ballot and ran for Congress against Senator Colby in Arizona in the elections in 2000, course, you know, when you get on the ballot, then you get the camera. So whenever I went, there are times when I exposed him as a fraud and his lies on live TV, and he didn't like that very well. So I got some very powerful enemies, and they wanted me to get off the air because I was hosting, producing two TV shows at the same time in Tucson. So they wanted me off the air really bad. About a year later, there was a friend of mine that was attacked by the city. The city was trying to take four houses from him. And I, you know, being a paralegal, I figured maybe I can help him with some of the research that goes into his defense here. So I started helping him with that. And one of the things he did, he assigned one of his houses to me to hold for him, figured that I could protect it better than he did. Well, I think so, because I think that's the one he's living in right now, and the other three properties were taken. He defended himself in a kind of a peculiar way that I didn't know. He attacked the city, and he filed a lien against a judge, perfected the lien. The lien was okay, was nothing wrong with that, but they didn't like that either, so they filed criminal charges against him, and since I was helping him out, then they filed criminal charges against me. So I got charged with two felonies, and one second degree and one sixth degree. And when we got to court, I had to defend myself, and it seemed like every time the prosecutor wanted to have something into the record, he was granted to do it. Whenever I wanted something in there, it was overruled. And right before the jury came in at the trial, he said, "I will give the jury briefing," he says, "and you will be quiet while I do that." And that made sense to me, so I didn't say anything. And they came in, and he said to the jury, "The court has determined that these people have engaged in criminal activity, and if you do not judge that way, you can get in trouble." With other words, he ordered the jury to convict.
That sounds like, yeah, you were definitely railroaded. That's total bullshit, yeah. Because the jury, you know all about, I'm sure, jury nullification.
Absolutely, but that I brought that up in one of my documents, and that was totally denied. They didn't even want that on record. So, no, yeah, but the jury did convict, and I got to spend 4 years at a resort, and I like to think of it, and I went away and studied, and I read books, and I had nice conversations with people for 4 years. Other people call it prison, so that's my take on it. But I wrote two books while I was there, and I have them on my website as well as on my Facebook page and a few other places, so you can see them. And I had an incredible experience while I was at that resort. I had a total download of universal information into my mind, where the universe was explained in detail and concept with full understanding. And this one, I'm writing some of it in my book, and I'm working on another one to come out, and there I'm going to go into a lot more details about the inventions and stuff, the science that I saw. So there's another one coming, and it's going to be interesting, because I didn't feel that the world was ready for it. I'm not so sure they're ready now, but I'm going to write about it anyway.
Yeah, the two books I think you're referring to, one is the Spiritual Science publication, as well as possibly Alien Encounters in America's...
Oh, yeah, that was an early one. That was back in 1997, I think. Me and Patricia Ress from Omaha wrote that book together. That was about Alien Encounters in America's Midwest. Now, the two books I was thinking of was, one of them was Spiritual Science, Higher Conscious Thinking, and How to Access the Universal Consciousness. Because there is a process to do this, where you can actually get this type of download, and you can do that. The other book, that is about universal success principles and how billionaires think.
Grant Cameron actually was one of another guest that we've had join us here on the Robin Hood. Speaking of which, I'm not sure if you remember last year, it was asked of you that you provide some sort of pirate story or pirate angle listeners may recall, of course, that you talked about and went into some detail as far as your pirate radio station experience. So just to remind folks, or and as well as yourself, that you've got clearance on the ship now. That's out of the way and taken care of.
Yeah.
Not to worry. But Grant Cameron, yeah, same kind of deal with him. As I said, a couple of months ago, we had him on board, and he claims to have had this cosmic kind of universal consciousness download, almost similar to what some people describe when having a psychedelic or LSD experience.
Yeah, yeah, that could be, I don't know about that because I've never done that, but that could be something similar, I suppose.
Sure, nobody slipped you a little bit of acid in
no.
your morning coffee?
No, I've never had any of those drugs at all. I just kind of stay away from it. Good reason for that, of course, is because, you know, you don't do that if you're a pilot, because that don't mix.
Oh, geez, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's the last person you want flying high.
Yeah, that's
so, not. Now, you claim to have seen the future of Earth and humanity. I guess this would be the time then, if that's all right. Let's hear about it. What exactly did you see?
Do you think you guys are ready to hear a little bit about what to expect in both the reasonably near future and the far future?
Yeah, sure. What are we talking then? So there's a short-term vision as well as a more long-term.
Well, let me go with the long one first, and then we can talk about some of the, just blend it up a little bit. I'll guarantee you, 50 years from now, or maybe 40 years, possibly 30 years, maybe 20 years from now, you will have robotic people or androids walking down the street next to you, and you will never know it. You'll have self-aware holograms. They will be real to the touch, and they will be just like human from a sight, from a distance. And single guys, they will have robotic housekeepers and a bed partner. And androids will do all the housework for you. They'll go to meetings for you. They will do your paperwork for you. They will do all the hard labor, and they'll be nice to have around because there's going to be a little more leisure time for us, at least for a lot of us. And nobody will drive cars anymore because that all will be automatic, because that'll be driverless cars. And I'm a commercial pilot with a multi-engine rating, so you also will find that there will be automatic airplanes, air taxis, and there will be airliners with no pilots in them. That's mostly for freight companies, because with passengers, I think there will be at least one pilot in the cockpit just sitting back there reading a book or something, kind of watching things, and let the autopilot and the flight director do the work. And another thing I saw is something that's going to come fairly, it's not going to be very far, maybe a year or two into the future possibly. There's a little device that's going to come, a part of it will come out of Israel. And I'm saying that because whoever over there is working on it, if they hear this show, don't give up, because it will be a phenomenal success. This device will read people's thoughts. And you will hang it on your ear, kind of like an, you know.
Bluetooth?
Yeah, something like that. Or you could use it as glasses, or they can use it as a pendant around your neck. But as long as you have it on you, and you can read or hear the thoughts of the people within about 6 feet or 6-8 feet of you. This will be a phenomenal success first. And then governments will clamp down on and try to make it illegal. But that's not going to work. People are going to make them anyway because they're so simple. I think the people in Israel is making a chip for it. And it can be introduced into anything. So just don't give up on that one. You can understand why the government don't want these out. The government wouldn't exist if it wasn't for secrecy. And if we can hear or understand what they're thinking, they wouldn't be able to lie to anything more. So you can see why they want to make it illegal. And also another thing, we will see probably next year or the year after, they will be making an announcement saying that we have now found a way to make solid lights, actually into a cube. They collect light and form it into a cube. And when you have this cube, you put that somewhere, it sits there basically forever. It's, of course, nothing is forever, but it'll sit there and light a room forever. Also, light will be used in gyroscopes, and that can be put into just about anything to replace the regular gyroscopes they're using now. We also will have a way to regrow limbs. If you lose a finger, there will be a powder or something that you can stick your hand, if your hand is missing, into that box, and it'll regrow the hand. Now, pharmaceutical companies, for the most, are done away with a few decades from now. And instead of the corrupt disease management system we have now discussed as a healthcare system, we will have a healing and wellness system which everybody participates in. And everybody produce and contribute to society in their own way. And for the ones that is not able to, they are taken care of anyway. More or less kind of like what they are now. They are taken care of in one way or the other. And, of course, unless you live in the United States and you are a homeless person, then nobody cares in government. But that will change. Life expectancy is very high because we have made it to become common knowledge that aging is a disease and it can be cured. And if you want to talk about that a little bit later, we can, because in 2009, three doctors got the Nobel Prize for the discovery of an enzyme that reverses the aging process, and nobody seems to know about it. On my website, you can read about that. The European Union has collapsed, and all member states are independent, but they're acting as one under the same voluntary rules, and Europe is thriving again. There was a short uprising and a very short bloodbath over there, and that was basically a religious one. The extraterrestrials are also back with us, and they're working with us on many projects, and cleaning up the environment is one of the first they attacked. And when this disclosure happens will not be very far from now. We're first introduced to what is under the ice in Antarctica. There will be free energy coming from that, and they have found some ancient people and some live new ones, so to speak, and they will find there's three ships that is found under the ice, and we're going to get to hear a little bit about what was in these ships, but much of it is still, they will not tell us everything. The first wave of aliens that come here, they're not our friends. They're here to enslave us. Together with the Catholic Church and governments, even, you know, they want to enslave us even more than what we are now. With a chip under the skin and mandatory vaccinations to reduce the population and so on. Now, the second wave of aliens, and not waves so much, but the second batch that show up, they are our friends because they're here to help us. Now, the Muslim disease that is trying to conquer Europe right now has been overcome. And I'm saying disease because that's the one we see. There's a lot of good people that just happen to be Muslims. And I have two of those. They are good friends. They don't bother anybody. They do their thing and we do our thing spiritually. And they're good people. So not everybody is that way that you see in Europe. Now, they finally discovered that a large number of the refugees coming into Europe, now they are on a mission to destroy and conquer. And they were expelled. And it was starting to be done in a genius way. They put pig's blood in spray bottles and mixed it up with water. And whenever they saw a Muslim that gave them grief, then they just took the spray bottle out and spray them with pig's blood, and they run for the hills, because you can't touch anything from a pig, because then you go to hell in their religion.
You wouldn't want to get caught doing that, of course, or you would I would imagine, almost immediately be charged with some form of hate crime.
Yeah, but self-defense, they're getting away with it, and after a while, when there's so much crime over there because of this, people don't care.
What you're laying out here, too, of course, this is all a part of what you foresaw in the future. It's not necessarily what's it's part of what's happening now, but I guess what the current state of things, where it's all going to more or less lead to in the not too distant future. Mm-hmm. Over the next, what would you say, 5, 10, 15, 20 years?
Oh, no. In the next 10 years, the aggressive Muslims will be removed from Europe. It could take that long to get the last of them out.
Via engaged citizens going around spraying them with pig's blood.
That's part of it, yeah. Especially the ones, they can use it for self-defense. And when people, when the Muslims over there, the ones that want to give people grief, when they see the spray bottle, they leave you alone.
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting, the whole Muslim issue as far as it relates to Europe and the West, so many people seem to look at it as an invasion, as if there's nothing that the West can do, and it's just all magically, just sort of coincidentally occurring. From my standpoint, and I'm sure others realize this too, though, the doors have been thrown completely open.
Yeah.
It's like, come on in. It's like they can't take them in fast enough.
Yeah,
people like Angela Merkel in Germany and others, Poland and other European countries, I'm not sure, maybe Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, they've thrown up, they've made it really, Russia, they've cracked down, of course, too, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, because it's, you know, I'm not sure if you've looked into this or heard about it, but the Kalergi plan and people like Albert Pike and the whole thing with the Hegelian dialectic, you know, order out of chaos. And, you know, things like that. So very, very disturbing, of course. From the way I see things, it's all being done quite intentionally, of course. And it's an elite agenda because they don't want to lose their grip on power. They need to constantly be throwing these diversions up and creating, sowing the seeds of chaos to keep the middle class and the lower class folks in their place, I guess, is what it seems. Whatever it takes to maintain their grip on power. It's kind of my take.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're all being, the politicians has been paid off by Soros. And they are doing the same in the United States. They are advertising in the newspapers to get people to come and do demonstrations. And they're paying them anything from 15 to 60 bucks an hour, depending on what they do.
That's right. Yeah, Charlottesville down in, is it South or North Carolina there in the U.S.? And endless provocations. They did it during the election with the Trump rallies. They'd send the provocateurs in there to stir things up and cause trouble and then try to blame it all on Trump. On record stating that, oh, yeah, we've been paid some good money to do this. So.
Yeah, they admitted it.
Yeah, pretty sad, frankly. Well, you've really opened up a big can of worms here, haven't you? So,
For the ones in the United States, I may also want to say that the corporation, the United States Corporation, formed in England in 1871, that is all also gone and no longer exists. And it's not going to be very long, and that one will be dissolved. And that will be a short economic revolution in the United States. And with a new economic system. And this is going to be a good one. For the ones that plan ahead, it'll be a great one. For the ones that don't plan ahead, they are going to be, could be 30 to 60 days of really scary times. But after that, in my timeline, it's going to be all right. Though there are other timelines out there that may not be the same. So we should think about that, because in a mind-created universe, we create our environment and our future the way that we allow thoughts to dwell in our mind. The thoughts we bring up and create in our mind, they also create our actions and our thinking and our environment around us. So it is our job to control our mind, because if we don't control it, somebody else does. Usually the people that talks to you at 5 o'clock on the news hour.
No doubt about that. One of the reasons, in fact, we've had the television set turned off here for quite a few years, choosing only to surf the web at our own discretion. Now, Carolyn Rose Goida, she brought up a great point. We wanted to mention this, of course, and give her a shout out. She has joined us in the YouTube chat area, so thanks for dropping by and coming on board, Carolyn. It's always good to see you. But she made the statement or claim. It was straight out of George Orwell's 1984. As you know, I'm sure some of our listeners will know that he who controls the present controls the past. He who controls the past controls the future. So that would almost seem to tie into what you are more or less getting at here with the business of how we think and timelines and being very, you know, on guard and wary of our thoughts.
Yeah, time is such an elusive concept. It's hard to understand without really start looking at quantum physics. When it gets into quantum physics, I lose myself in the equation. So I can understand some of it, but it doesn't take long before I am all gone. But the concepts and the foundation of the theories, I can understand that. When it comes to time, in fact, for as long as we know, there's never been really any scientific evidence that time even exists. But we know because we see it. Well, what we see it is a mind-created construct. Since we live in a mind-created universe, we are creating time because our consciousness have no way to experience the physical reality without time. Outside of time, up in the higher vibration, past, present, and future is right now. It all is there. Except for the physical and the lower astral worlds, there you have still time. But time itself is a myriad of present moment placed after each other, just like frames of pictures stacked after each other. And we are passing through those present moment pictures so fast that it appears as it is one continuous flowing time. So time actually acts as a wave. There's an argument here somewhere. Let me see if I can remember how that would put. Between every picture of present moment, there is nothing. Absolutely nothing. And then the whole universe we see and observe is recreating itself for the next present moment. Now, there is somebody out there thinking, well, wait a minute, I have a fast camera. If I can get, there are cameras now that takes a picture of 1/10,000th of a second. What if that happened to be between those two present moment? Well, the thing about it is that since there is nothing in between those two present moment, the camera wouldn't even exist. It would not be there to take the picture. So this is what quantum physics is finding out. And they are having a little problem explaining it because they got to explain it so that physical thinking, Newtonian thinking public can understand it. And that's a hard one because this, what's in between each present moment is not explainable by Newtonian physics.
Did we just hear you reference what's sometimes known as Schrodinger's cat paradox? You're talking about the camera not being there. Are you familiar with the Schrodinger's cat?
Yeah, I read something about that in long in the distant past, yeah.
You're also, of course, I think the point you're kind of hitting on here is the gap between our thoughts and between each moment, which really ties into a lot of what is talked about in Eastern philosophy and spiritual traditions with respect to emptiness and the gap.
Yeah.
The gap, this is really, there's a lot of power there, of course, and a lot of, you know, musicians know it very well, that it's not so much the notes that you play and that you hit on, so much as the spaces that you leave between each note. So,
yeah.
You know, I guess you could say the same thing for the way that we're conducting our conversation today.
Yeah. And I imagine also you being in the Far East, you may have some more and little better view of the environment on that than me here in the West.
We are living in the future, which is one of the things that I reminded you of last time we spoke. But what do you mean exactly by a clear view of the environment? I'm not sure if I follow you.
Well, the Eastern philosophies are more prevalent over there, aren't they?
Well, in some ways, yes, although Korea in particular, Christian fundamentalism, unfortunately, has really been all the rage here in many ways since the time of the Korean War when Jesus brought food and rations and blankets and and after everyone had been, you know, wiped out to, you know, via the American military, of course. So that's where that really all took off, that Jesus was saving the mercy of the Western liberators. So
give him the credit when there's something good, but sure don't do that when there's something bad.
But of course, there's many temples here, and you can't escape it, of course. Confucianism, Taoism, it's kind of ingrained in their culture over the course of, many thousands of years. The influence that China has had in shaping Korea and the Korean people's outlook and mindset on so many different levels and in just so many different ways. I enjoy living here very much. I know there's been a lot of talk recently regarding North Korea, and a lot of, saber rattling and fear mongering and bellicose. There's a great word. People might want to get up their dictionaries and look up that one, but, a lot of bellicose rhetoric. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that we here have been living under the same existential threat and ongoing, unfolding, well, what would you call it? Some sort of the drama. Isn't it interesting too, the way that they refer to it as the theater of war? It's a big stage play, isn't it? But it's been the case here for the last, 60, 70 years or so. On the Korean Peninsula, having not, I guess, apparently officially signed this treaty. So
South Korea is probably more like a suburb to the United States, possibly.
Heavy influence. I mean, it's really kind of the crossroads. A lot of major powers, Russia, China. But the bottom line, they're all doing business with one another. So I frankly don't see this whole thing of war is a real distraction, frankly. Fear is a powerful thing, of course, too. And if people can get sucked into that, to that kind of mindset where they go around living their lives in perpetual fear, that really weakens them, I would imagine, and makes them more susceptible and vulnerable in all kinds of different ways.
Well, you know, the CIA and the military-industrial complex is what creates all the fear, because they create this because they need the money flowing into the military, so their buddies in the companies that own these big military companies, McDonnell Douglas and some of these, they got to get the money flowing in for military hardware, and they do all these things to make sure that it happens.
You know, I really have not been following the news as closely as I should have the last little while, or as closely as many other people do. But I guess there's been a recent announcement and kind of bit of a push that Trump is backing an upsurge or more troops and more of an influx, ramping things up in Afghanistan once again, whereas I think Obama kind of geared things down a little bit there and withdrew a lot of the military, you know, U.S. Military that were stationed there. You got a lot of opium fields to protect and take care of.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Because you got to remember the CIA is the biggest drug dealer in the world. And, of course, the British Crown, number two, and the Vatican, number three. So they got to protect their business out there.
There you go. Who was it? There's a renegade politician. He wrote a book. I think it might have been called Dope Incorporated.
Yep.
He's an older fellow now. I'm not sure. I think he's still around, but he actually he was really kind of a fringe sort of a character in the American political scene, had a big following, but he fingered people like Henry Kissinger and the Queen, as you say, and I guess, you know, probably the Vatican. They're all part of things, of course, too. Let's not kid ourselves. Along with everything else, every other dirty business you can possibly imagine, including human trafficking and, you know, international money laundering. But, Skull and Bones, speaking of the CIA, you know, we've got our own kind of Skull and Bones thing here, too. But let's not forget, it's not like all pirates think alike necessarily or are all batting for the same team. So just to get that out there and make sure your people are kept clear on that whole matter. But General Russell was the founder, I think, well, of the Skull and Bone Society out of Yale University, and he was a notorious and very highly prominent opium smuggler during the opium wars of the mid to late 19th century. So, plus les choses changent is how I like to put it. The more things change, and really in many ways, that's what we are seeing in Afghanistan, even to this day is what it seems, just the opium wars, you know, 2.0. Although Wikipedia doesn't really kind of, they don't want to kind of spin it that way, unfortunately.
Oh, but, of course not. Of course not.
All right. Well, let's see. We've got, once again, a handful of people who have joined us in the YouTube, the chat area. Feel free, folks, if you have any questions or comments for Augie, just to, we want to hear more from you. Keep them coming. So one of the things I was going to say regarding your podcast, actually, this is always a bit of an irritant for me. Abby Martin, who she's a really kind of a well-known journalist herself. I left her a little note there on her Facebook page. She was kind enough to get back to me. These sort of things do happen from time to time. Yeah, you know, people of that stature and social media and whatnot do take the time and effort to reach out to us more sort of Bush League type characters.
Okay.
You know, I'm not speaking for myself and our production here, of course, nothing to do with you, but there's no download option. And I brought you this to her attention too, that it kind of, you know, kind of irked me, and she agreed that it was something that was worth looking into and that she would try to do what she could to remedy that. But is there any way, can you not look into that yourself so that you can make your shows more accessible? One of the things I know I like to do, and I'm sure many others as well, is to archive podcasts and have them, to have them downloaded. Do you know about that at all? Have you looked into that?
Oh, yeah, I do that. Whenever I do a radio show in about the next 30, 40 minutes or sometimes several hours, then I get a link to it where they're all archived, and I place it on my website, I place it on Facebook so people can go and they will click on that link and they can listen to the whole show again. So, and they can take that link and move it to their own website or wherever they want to take it.
Right. But the thing, though, what I'm getting at here, Augie, I know we can stream it. We can stream the show easily enough. That's not a problem. Mm-hmm. But to actually download the MP3 that you don't have right now, which is with your settings, the way you've got things in place there. And that was one of the things that I just noticed.
Oh, that's night. What you meant. Yeah.
So.
Just dang.
Food for thought. I think you can tweak that. Just look at the settings there and have that set up so people can do that.
I will run that up the flagpole and see if I can get somebody to salute it.
You betcha. So, Blog of Mysteries, is that something that you've trademarked? I think that's your own creation, of course. That's your album archive? Is that?
That is, I write things on there from time to time. I have... there's a blog date back to December 23, 2015 that explains how to reverse your aging process. And then I have radio shows on there, and I got a few videos that I got on there. So it's kind of a hodgepodge of things, but Blog of Mystery is just a term I came up with. A
lot of great content and material there. People definitely recommend people drop by there and check things out. Joseph Newman was one of the characters that we had... talked about in the show that we put together last year, the conversation we had.
Yeah.
It looks like he was a creator of, really kind of cutting edge technology, like almost like a perpetual motion or energy machine of types. You did interview him a number of years ago while you had your, your independent local kind of cable TV show. I believe it was Tucson. Unfortunately, he just passed away last year. What do you know about details there? Or what's the latest?
I know. That was just a shame. He had some 20-some years ago, he started working with both electromagnetics and magnetics, and he came up with a system that he arranged magnets in certain position towards each other, and he spins them. And then he extracts electricity from that magnetic force. And he funnels that back in to run the motor that turns the magnets. I found out about him, and we got his book, and we read it, and that was phenomenal. And I went up to Phoenix, Arizona, and we were standing, me and a lady friend here, and we were standing in his garage, and he demonstrated it. And it had 144% effectiveness at idle. And it was running something like 200 RPM or some 240 RPM. If you run it up more than that, the effectiveness of the over-unity, that just skyrocketed. So he had this motor that was probably around a foot across as a cylinder and about 1 meter long. Well, that's 3 foot. He put that into an automobile, and he ran the automobile without fuel basically forever. And, of course, you know, he didn't run it forever, but he ran it until all he had to do is to plug it in, turn the motor a little bit, and then once it starts turning, it produces its own power, and you can run the car. And, of course, you know, the powers that be, you know, they called the friends over in Saudi Arabia and says, what do you think we should do about this? And they gave them the answer that probably wasn't very good for Newman. So he had some problems for 20 years trying to get this to market. It never worked. He he had several deals. There was one guy that came, he had nearly $1 billion that they were going to pay him for the invention. And he told them that, well, that's fine. He says, if you write into the contract that you will put it to market and make it available. And they told him that when we give you that kind of money, we don't want any attachments from you. And he understood very well that we're going to shelf it, so he told him to get out of the house, and that's when his problems started. He moved to Australia, and I think he died down there, like you say, a year ago.
And now you're not really too up to speed then, I guess, on the particulars. I'm not too clear on how old he was, whether he had been suffering from long-term health problems, or it was, say, like a car accident?
No, I don't know anything about that. I know he was in his 60s. That's all I really know. And when I met him, of course, that was a long time ago. That was probably about 15 years ago. I asked him about his health, and he said it was perfect. So he was healthy then. But a lot of things can happen. So you don't really know what happened to him. I don't.
You know, you hear these kind of stories time and again where this is the MO, the modus operandi, where the powers that be hear about these cutting edge technologies, energy saving, highly efficient, and, you know, really out of this world in many ways. And they, they come and make an offer that you just can't refuse. But unfortunately, the catch is that, as you say, they reserve the right to just, you know, they have no intention in the first place really to market what you have produced. They're going to shelve it. And much in the way that with all the inventions that Tesla came up with and others, I think, is what Hutchinson, I believe, which I think you know a little bit about yourself. But yeah, it's a big money game. And a lot of times if people can't be bought off, they are, they just quietly disappear.
Yeah, I know it. I knew a guy in Phoenix, Arizona also. This was back in, God knows, probably about 30 years ago. I was down there for some reason. We were having an airplane reupholstered or something. And there was a guy there that had a pickup truck that he drove up to the side of the house, put the water hose in the gas tank, and filled up the tank, and then he capped it, and then he drove for another 3 or 4 weeks on that. And there were one night he had the truck sitting outside. He came out in the morning and the truck was gone and nobody knew where it went. They stole it.
Did he not have the design?
Oh, yeah. He could do it again and he probably did, but they stole that one. It's fairly simple to do. A friend of mine right here, he doubled his gas mileage on a big Mercedes Benz. And, you know, the gas mileage on those older ones, you know, those, you know, 15 years old, you know, there's not too much to write home about. But he doubled it by putting a hydrogen generator on that car. And if we can figure out how to do that, why do you not think that the car companies can figure it out? Of course, they're just prostitutes to the oil company.
Yeah, it's just like cancer or any of these other, you know, we could maybe talk a little bit about that, just some quick examples of how remedies and cures are being suppressed. Or, well, look at why marijuana. I know you're not a big, drug person per se, but this is a plant that has been put here on this earth, not by any politician or government body or agency. It is a gift of creation and part of the nature's medical cabinet and all that it has to offer, a vast bounty of richness. And there's so much that it's been proven now to be able to help and assist people with, not only just to relieve their suffering, but help extend life. They don't have to die. You can live a lot longer, a lot happier life by taking all kinds of juices or what have you through the
absolutely
cures.
It's a miracle plant, and it can cure just about anything. Maybe the only thing I can think of that it can't do nothing for is just hangnails, and it'll work for just about anything else. That's why the pharmaceutical companies actually, in the beginning, it was the oil companies, the plastic companies that got together and said, hey, we got to get rid of this because hemp can put us out of business. So they got rid of hemp and then, of course, marijuana with it. So it's been, I don't know how many decades now it's been gone, but it's coming back. And there's nothing they can do to stop it. Because in the future, there'll be herbal medicine and there'll be natural medicines everywhere. And in fact, in places in England right now, and you have radionic shops where you can go in and get electronically treated. You can send your hair sample to somebody, let's say in England right now, and they can get on the radionic computer and they can treat you 6,000 miles away. And it can work. I used to have a radionic computer, a Mark 12, made by Copeland Laboratories in England, and we made vitamin C out of water. And you put a vitamin C pill in the in a well on the top of the computer, and then put a glass of water in the other well, and you transfer the energy from the pill into the water, and then you drink the water. Suddenly, you have the effect of vitamin C. Because we had that tested. We gave two different bottles of water, one that was not treated and one that was treated with vitamin C. And the laboratory came back and said, yeah, one got vitamin C in it. What's the deal? And we just wanted to have it confirmed that it was done. So this little machine creates things out of seemingly nothing because it reaches into the quantum and pulls the energy back and places it into the water. And the same thing, your body is, 72 or some percent water. And when you treat the water in your body, you can perfectly well treat any disease in the body.
That seems to make sense. Pretty straightforward enough. Now, you're talking quantum technology and radionics. What exactly...
Radionics, it goes all the way back into the 1950s when the first radionic schematics was patented. What they do, it's kind of like it reaches into the quantum. It pulls the energy out of the quantum. It pulls the energy it needs for healing purposes, or you could use it for, let's say, in a field where they're full of bugs. You can treat it for bugs, and the bugs leave. You don't necessarily kill them. They just leave the field because it's a bad energy for them there, so they just fly off. This has been used in agriculture, and it works very well. Chemical companies, they don't want to hear about it, so they poo-poo it, and they try to run anybody out of business that's trying to do something with it. In fact, in a lot of countries, it's even illegal.
Well, not only that, but compulsory... spraying of pesticides, a big push here, I know, in South Korea to spray everything. The first thing I comes to mind when I hear pesticides of any kind is thanks, but no thanks. I really don't want cancer today, if that's
right.
Joe Emanon actually just recently dropped into the conversation here over on YouTube, claiming that he got ripped off by DARPA in college, pulse fusion and superconductors, high temperature research confiscated. So I guess that's in response to what we were discussing regarding Mr. Newman as well as Hutchinson, whose materials, of course, were confiscated, everything that he was working with there. The RCMP swept, they moved in and just, you know, took everything away from him, and who knows where it all ended up. But he also added to this, stating that they took his thesis extant and all copies, locked in a burlap sack, forced to sign form, never to discuss it. Joe is an interesting character, someone that maybe we can, you know, one of the decent features, one of the few decent features, I must say, that Facebook has to offer. There's a lot of problems that it currently has, and it seems it's only getting worse by the day. But thankfully, they have not eliminated the suggest a friend feature. So maybe after the show here today, we can, if you're not already in contact with Joe, it'd be someone that to.
Yeah, I don't know, but please send me a friend request if we are not already friends.
We'll absolutely work on doing that. So just going back to the show that we did last year, this is just such a fascinating topic. We talked about, because I know you have been a practitioner of hypnosis for many years. You've taught on the subject. You're big into self-hypnosis. I'm not sure about the NLP end of things exactly, but one of the things that we did discuss, and, you know, feel free to, you know, give a little more kind of context to things and backstory, but one of the things that we talked about last year was Darren Brown and the Manchurian Candidate, how people can be, like in the case of, for example, Sirhan Sirhan with RFK, or Mark David Chapman, it's been alleged, and how he, you know, with him shooting John Lennon, then just sitting down, really kind of really bizarre sort of fashion. He could have taken off and disappeared into the night, but sat down with his copy of Catcher in the Rye, J.D. Salinger's famous book, as it seems so many of these Manchurian candidates do, and started reading from it. Did you get a chance to see, I think I sent you a link to the assassin episode that Darren put together. He's what's known as a mentalist. He does some hypnosis as well as part of his stage act and performance. You're up to speed on how this all works, and that people can be essentially put under the spell of another Svengali type personality or character and end up doing things that are against their will. Is that not the case?
Oh, absolutely. Hypnosis is not very well understood, and most of the books you read, they are written by psychiatrists, psychologists, or PhDs that has got some type of a practice where they have people coming to them wanting to have hypnosis done. In their book, if they were to tell the truth about hypnosis, they wouldn't have any clients. There are several murders on the record under hypnosis. They always tell you that, you know, under hypnosis, you can't make anybody do anything against their will, against their moral character or their religion or anything like that. Now, that's bull perky. You can have people do absolutely anything. I have seen some really amazing stuff that is negatively. I saw a grandmother one time crawling around on a stage under hypnosis, trying to pick up grain with her nose, thinking she was a chicken. Let's put it this way. If I took you, put you in a chair and talked to you for 15 minutes and told you that when you woke up, there will be an elephant standing next to you in the room. If I did my job right, when you woke up, that elephant would be there. You reach out and you touch the trunk on that elephant and you can feel the skin, the roughness of it. You can smell the elephant. So now what happened to your reality? That is very real to you. There have been done experiments with this. They kept people under hypnosis for weeks. And when they woke them up, they said, wait a minute, I don't want this. I want to be back where the reality is. They wanted back under hypnosis because that became real to them. So when I said that we live in a mind-created universe, which one of those two realities is the more real one? If we could do that, we could also make people believe, and I always joke about this, nobody should ever even think about doing anything like it, but I could get a nun to go out on stage and take all her clothes off in front of 500 people. All we had to do is to get her to believe she's at home in her own bathroom ready to take a shower. This can be done. And that's why it is so dangerous. And don't ever go to a hypnotist unless you have a tape recorder with you or a friend. Most of them are totally honorable and they will do a wonderful job for you. But it's that one out of 300 that nobody knows about.
Sure. Completely sound advice, of course. On top of this all, is it not the case that there are certain trigger words that the unconscious or subconscious can be implanted with? And that these trigger words are used that suddenly there is a shift where this alternate reality suddenly reemerges?
Absolutely. That's called the post-hypnotic signal. So when that post-hypnotic signal is told to you that on and when you hear this word, you will do such and such. And then when you go about your day and whoever is with you and trying to engage you into doing something, or whenever you hear that word, you'll go and do that thing that was suggested to you. And it has nothing with moral character, because it's the subconscious that acts through the conscious mind. And the subconscious believes everything. It has no reasoning up and beyond that. It's the conscious mind that tells, oh, gee, that's illegal, or this is not right. The subconscious believes everything it is told to be absolute fact. So when the subconscious comes to the surface, it will do whatever it is told.
Is it not the case as well that some people are more susceptible to hypnosis, and that others, it's more difficult, if not in fact impossible, to be put into these altered states of reality?
Yeah, that's true. And I used to hear that once in a while. Somebody say, oh, I can't be hypnotized. There's no way. I've tried 3 or 4 times and it didn't work. Well, everybody can be hypnotized. All you have to do is sit down, turn the TV on, and you are hypnotized.
Televalium.
Yeah. Or all you have to do is put him in a chair and find the barriers that prevents that person from going under, and you remove the barriers. Now he can be hypnotized. Sometime you have to talk to them for an hour to find the barriers, and then you remove them.
How about that? You know, I'm pretty sure, as I recall, L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, was an accomplished hypnotist.
Yeah.
Not only him, but also Colonel Tom Parker, Elvis Presley's manager. We just did a show on Elvis last week. Forgot to bring that up. It would have been a great talking point, though. Do you know much about either of those?
Very little. I loved Elvis's music. I used to buy every single that he came out with when I was back in Europe. And, I loved his music, but I didn't know much about Parker. I never really studied him.
Oh, yeah. Something definitely worth looking into. So he would, on some of the movie sets, I guess, in fact, you know, they did it for fun, I guess. It was a bit of a joke. You're talking about this lady being put under into this trance-like state, thinking that she was a chicken going around pecking away at grain on the stage, the floor there. So same kind of deal with Parker pulling similar stunts and having people do the most ridiculous things and everybody having a big laugh. It has been speculated this is what happened with Elvis, that it's why he was never able to break away from Parker, even though the Colonel might have not have been the best influence, you know, and person to help manage his career. It's because he was under Parker's spell.
Somebody that is really good at this, they can put somebody under hypnosis and they wouldn't know it. There are things that you can do that's a combination of NLP and hypnosis, and they just totally become your slave, more or less.
Yeah, that's kind of how the story goes. Candy Jones, Long John Neville, you might have heard the name, you might be familiar with those two characters, but I guess that was the deal with her, that she had somehow been part of, is it the MK Ultra or Monarch, the sex slave program that has been running now for quite a few years on a semi-covert basis. but seems to be quite rampant through the world of celebrity and Hollywood and the like. All kinds of people that you see it from time to time, their programming, they come unwound. People like Katy Perry, I guess, just recently, very, really strange. Her antics on stage, really bizarre kind of behavior. So Long John Neville and Candy Jones, are you, Bill Burns actually no. wrote about this in one of his books. So
no, yeah. I'm not familiar with that.
All right. Just another name, something, a yeah. little story you might be interested in looking into at some point. But, we got half a dozen folks that are listening to the show that we're working on putting together here as we stream live this week with Augie Nost, episode 72 of Pirate Radio Podcast, the last show that we've got to present to listeners here the month of August 2017. Just to remind people, we are all booked up, actually, right until December is the way things stand now at the present. So we're pretty happy about that. Looking forward, of course, to the Christmas season with Operation Secret Santa, as well as what we're planning on will be an annual recap for the year. So a couple other questions that we've got for you here as we kind of wind things down with a little more than 10 minutes or so left to go. And let's not forget, too, we'll save that to the end. We've already talked about it a time or two here as far as your website and contact information is concerned, but mm-hmm. we'll definitely get that, share that with people before we sign off here for the evening. The Secret Space Program, you've followed that quite closely, I do believe. Maybe have heard of this character, Corey Good, who I guess he was slated to speak as a keynote MUFON speaker. They had him booked, I guess, for this one of this year's big gatherings. I'm not sure if he actually appeared, if this conference is yet to be held or not, but if you could just talk about that for a few minutes, both the Secret Space Program, Corey Good, he's a controversial figure. Whether, in fact, you agree with what he's presenting to the public, or perhaps, you know, think he's a little off base with some of his views.
Well, that goes for most people, you know, and I think he's on to a lot of things, and I think he's right about a lot of things. And when you talk about the Secret Space Program, I don't even understand, why do we keep asking if there is one? It has already been confirmed. In the citizens' hearing on disclosure in 2013, Senator Mike Gravel, he said, and in fact, I wrote myself a little note, so I'll quote this. We have a space force. It is in existence. It is there. Unquote now. We have never heard about that from government, so this is the secret space program, the space force. And this is the fleet that Gary McKinnon found when he hacked into NASA computers looking for UFO information and the secret space program. He found free energy devices and engines, and he found a secret U.S. space battalion with 10 or possibly more ships. Two of them was called the USSS LeMay and one USSS Hillencotter. And he found about 30 names of non-terrestrial officers. Shouldn't that sound like maybe alien officers? He found logs of ship-to-ship transfers. That sounds pretty far out, but this is all happening in space. And we're, of course, not told about this because this is the secret space program. The reason I'm covering some of this is because we need to know. Ben Rich, which is the head of the Lockheed Skunk Works, he said one time, and I'll quote that one too, "We already have the means to travel among the stars, but these technologies are locked up in black projects, and it would take an act of God to ever get them out to benefit humanity. Anything you can imagine, we already know how to do." That's what he said.
Yeah, it's a famous quote. From Mr. Rich, he's now deceased. I'm not sure when it was exactly that he passed away. Admiral Byrd, of course, too. I know we talked about this last year as well, how the technology, I think is what he claimed. This is back in 1947, too, Operation High Jump. the technology existed to travel from one pole to the next in
30 minutes.
Yeah, not very long at all. So now the history of the secret space program, I guess the roots go back to somewhere in the area of what the Nazi Bell, I guess. Is that not the case? World War II? The work that they were doing back during that time frame?
Yeah, they used a lot of that. The secret space program started right after Paperclip came with all the, you know, the German scientists. They started to figure out, we have all this brain power. What are we going to do with it? So they created the CIA with one part of it. They went into medical research with another section of it. And then they, of course, Wernher von Braun started out in, you know, NASA. And that grew into other areas because when they discovered that these people, they have anti-gravity, and that went underground. So that's probably where that secret space program started. In 2016, the secret space program, or should I say the Black Projects, they were funded to the tune of, by Congress, it was funded to the tune of about $83 billion. But that's only maybe possibly 10% of what it takes to run that program. The rest of it is covered by CIA's drug trade and other things.
It's all off the books, too, is it not? It doesn't go to Congress at all, does it?
No, it doesn't go. But it is mentioned in some of the budget reports. So they found that it was $64.8 billion, I think they said, for the budget in 2016 for the Black Projects. That's just part of it. I bet it's at least a half a trillion.
This is one of the things, too, that listeners, just to remind people, I'm sure, you know, for some will be quite straightforward and has not yet escaped their memory, but the Iran-Contra affair. Back in the mid-1980s with Oliver North, George Bush Sr. was, you know, weaseling his way around there in the background in the Reagan administration.
Yeah.
Guns and drugs. And it's the same old modus operandi, the way that they do this and work to funnel off money through the drug trade, this illicit sale and transfer and purchasing of, illicit narcotics to quietly help fund black op projects.
The United States is not unique to this. This is done everywhere in the world. The Brits do it. The European Union, they have their own secret, not space program, because that's joint with the U.S., but they have their own funding from illegal activities. It's done everywhere, so it's not unique to the United States. So, hey, let's not think we're special that way.
Right. That's a good point, in fact. So, what sort of cooperation is there then at the highest levels, would you say, with respect to these covert operations?
The breakaway society that is composed by the Russian, the Europeans, the Brits, United States, I believe there are Chinese and possibly Japanese. At one level, at a certain level of height in both politics and behind the curtain, there is an agreement that we will not fight ourselves because they have created this breakaway society which they have built, bases on the moon, they have bases on Mars. We can see them. I got pictures of them on my website. You can go there and look, especially on the first page of the photo album. You can see a bunch of stuff. They are there. These people, they travel from Earth to the moon and to Mars. Not necessarily every week, but ever so often, back and forth, there is a technology here that we have not been allowed to see or even hear about. And all this is going to blow up in their face not very far into the future when this thing is coming out of Antarctica. People are going to start asking questions. And it's going to get unraveled. They're not going to be able to control it. And we're going to get to hear a lot more of the next few years about what's going on there.
A lot of talk in the alternative media as of late regarding Antarctica. Certain things that are said to be coming in the not-too-distant future. What exactly then would we be looking at?
There are many companies that has gone down there, and there are the huge activity down there. They're building big hangar-looking types of things. They are trying to figure out, what are we going to do with the technologies we are finding here? How can we make money on it and at the same time be able to control the people? So the big companies, the global international companies, they are trying to break down these technologies and get them to make sense so they can sell it to us for a monthly fee, just like they are doing with the electric bill right now. But it's not going to work that way. Sooner or later, somebody that is sitting alone in his garage tinkering, he's going to figure out how to make a little unit of the same thing that he can plug in his own wall. So this is going to come apart. There is no way they can control it, even though they are trying. I've seen it's not going to be able to be controlled.
So you're saying that there's no way the powers that be will be able to either suppress or eliminate these independent thinkers and innovators?
It's not going to work because there's going to be too many of them. And in the beginning, they're going to try to suppress some of the technology because we are being led to believe that it is so complicated and so big that private individuals cannot get involved with this. It's got to be done with the people in companies that has a lot of money, but it can be simplified, and they don't want us to know that.
Exactly. Just going to give a quick rundown here. Joe Eminon's been very active in the chat area, throwing out all kinds of little cryptic comments and the like, talking about no real name just now, non-disclosure till end of time, plus one day. Hypnotic sedatives, that's why hypnotic sedatives work. Trigger phase, point H, high IQ. Raster scan, 30 hertz. Just a few more things here, Augie, and then just if you can just make a note of what's being presented here, and then maybe comment on what we've covered as we'll wind things down here with the discussion. Rockahula Baby, the king was hypnotized. I think that would be an Elvis reference, of course.
Yeah.
Startle the calm. Artichoke. Was it Operation Artichoke? 0 point energy. Quantum mass negation. GAO. Lagrange Satellite Program, Project Stingray, and Arctic Subbase, I think is what we've just been referencing here. They kill. Well, yes, Murder Incorporated. Yeah. Murder Incorporated, so. Mm-hmm.
I got one comment when it comes to all the sciences we are seeing right now and the ones we will see in the future. I think the creators of Star Trek got it wrong. You know, they said, space, the final frontier. The mind is the final frontier. And in my book, I teach people how to get to use this mind. Because nobody ever taught us how to use it. People think it's automatic. No, it isn't. There are things you can do. If you took that guy off the street and put him in the cockpit of a Boeing 747, he wouldn't have a clue. Give him 1 year's training and he can take us flying. Same thing with the mind. We never was taught how to use it. But if you read that book 3 times, you'd be amazed what you can do. That's what I teach in there. So that's my comment on that. And I think if you read it 3 times, you need to get in touch with me because then you are ready for stage 2.
Spiritual Science, is that the book that
yes.
you're referencing? Okay. Now, having mentioned that, is there any possibility, sometimes authors are able to do this, other times it's a little more complicated, but if people that have tuned into today's presentation or maybe just going through the archives happen to get in touch with you and mention that they've heard episode 72, what we've put together here today, and would like to purchase your book, would a discount be on the table at all? Is there any possibility?
I am not able to do that, but right now on Amazon, they are doing somewhat of a discount, was I told. So I should check into that, and the listeners should too. My agreement with the publisher is that I basically stay in the background. I don't get involved in the marketing.
That's the way that some people just, they've got things set up.
Yeah, they got it locked up, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, there you go. Now, as far as the mind goes, and I think this will probably be the last point that we'll hit on here, but the whole business, of course, non-duality, which is often talked about within the context of Eastern philosophy and spiritual traditions. I believe it all originated out of India. This is even discussed from time to time within the context of quantum physics, as well as, well, just, you know, modern contemporary spirituality, that there is no fundamental separation. Dualism is an illusion, basically, both within ourselves as well as what we perceive as being an external or outside world. I often like to travel, not in a sense of astral travel, maybe a little bit of this Tibetan dream yoga, although I'm not very well skilled at it by any means. Some pretty trippy dreams, though, from time to time. That's most definitely the case. But I do like to travel in just in my mind, in the sense that I've been kind of held captive here, have not left the country in the past 10 years because of, well, I'm voting with my feet. Not a big fan of the present system they have in place with biometric facial scans, fingerprints, and the like. For me, I was raised with the understanding that anyone that submits fingerprints to the police and the state, that they were a suspect criminal. I really don't like that. Not too comfortable with that whole idea. So I have not left South Korea in the past 10 years. We'll have to see. Until things change, it's probably, I'm just going to stay put and possibly quite likely just end up dying here. I do like to travel, though, and that's why I experience, you know, there's a part of me that really is part of us all, I guess. I think you'd probably agree to this, that's in touch with and contact with all regions of the universe at all times.
Well, actually, that is not that hard to do. And I explain in the book very simply how to do some of these things. When we think about the mind, what is it anyway? Let me give you something to think about. I may have done this last time, but I'm not so sure. You know, science has been telling us since the beginning that matter and energy cannot be created from nothing. Then again, we have some of the sharpest people on the planet, like Stephen Hawking at Cambridge University in England, and most theoretical physicists now, they're saying that their equations on the blackboard prove this universe was created from nothing. And if this whole universe was created from nothing, and everything in it was created from nothing, and you are in this universe created from nothing, what are you? Think about that.
Pretty empty when it comes right down to it.
We are nothing physical, but we are all mind. That supports saying what you just said, that there is no duality. We are all one.
Yeah.
Because there is only one mind. We have different expressions of it. I have an expression sitting here. You have another expression of that mind sitting over there half a world away.
Mm-hmm. You know, we are born into the singularity, and we when we die, there's no change, really, as far as I see it. It's still, there's an inherent cosmic singularity that exists. I'm not sure where you stand on this, but from my way of seeing things, there is a faux singularity with these, the transhumanists, or, you know, post-humanists, and let's not forget, that does mean after humans. You know, people that are into robotics and the like, and I know you've kind of touched on this with Borgs and maybe artificial intelligence and the like in the first few minutes of the show, but it's a faux, like in the sense of false singularity that people like maybe Elon Musk, and I'm not sure if Bob Bigelow, a name that you may or may not be familiar with, another super wealthy, you know, mega rich billionaire that's involved in, you know, interested in
space,
otherworldly matters and the like, but I'm not sure if he's an advocate of this or not. You see what I'm saying, as far as there's an inherent kind of natural singularity that we're a part of innately, but there's a certain agenda at play here where they're trying to impose this false singularity on top of that. So what do you think of that? Where do you stand on the whole issue?
Well, we have so many distractions, and one of them is this mental disease called religion. And we got to get rid of that in order to reach into the quantum where we can meet ourselves. What we think about day to day, our private conversations and everything that goes on in our head clogs the subconscious, so that whatever we receive or could receive from that universal self-aware consciousness does not make it up to conscious understanding. It is blocked. That's what we do in meditation. We sit down, empty our mind out, and now we have direct access from the conscious mind into the subconscious mind, through the superconscious mind, to the universal consciousness, and all the way back. Now we can ask questions and we can get answers. This is what I did when I had the download. I explain exactly how to do this in the book also. We get rid of our thoughts, because then we can program the universe to do things for us. And we don't use English. That's the wrong language. There's not English, German, Chinese, or any earth language. It's a language of emotion, intention, love, compassion. Those are the languages of the spiritual world. When we start using those languages, that's when things start happening. That's why prayer doesn't work. It hardly ever works, because we are using the wrong language. And I have proven that many times since I come back from vacation, so to speak. I've been able to create some very, very good situations here, from molding the universe consciousness into giving or participating in what I do. And this is what we should do. And we should also engage the mastermind principle. The one that Art Bell 20-some years ago used when there had not been rain in Texas for over 3 months. It was totally dried out. No rain, no water. Cattle was dying. Fires, brush fires everywhere. He told his 7 or 10 or 15 million listeners, think of rain over Texas. And we all did. I was listening that night. And the next morning, there were thunderstorms all over Texas. And there was rain for the cattle, and people got water, and the brush fires were put out. And the weather forecasters came forward and said, gee, we're dumbfounded. We had no idea this could happen. Nowhere in the computer models were there any moisture that could create this rain, but it happened. They didn't understand. Well, I understood. It was the mastermind principle of several million people got together thinking of one thing, and that reached into the quantum and pulled the rain out and gave it to Texas.
Sure, or very coincidental. There's another possibility, too, that it was Art called up his friends in Harp and told pull the trigger. You know, let it rip.
Well, Harp, though, they can actually raise the stratosphere, but they do not. They don't have a way to create moisture out of nothing.
What about the cloud seeding program that's been in place since the Vietnam era?
Absolutely. It's alive and well, you betcha. But they have to have either clouds or moisture in order to condense it in such a way that it falls out as a droplet.
I see. So basically, when this occurred 20-some-odd years ago in Texas, there was not a cloud in the sky.
There was no cloud in the sky down there at all. And when you have 3% or I don't know what it was, 3 to 5% moisture in the air, there's no moisture there to fall out as rain.
Gotcha. You talk about using the wrong language. You know, what came to mind there when you mentioned that was vibration and frequency, just taking it to a kind of deeper level. Of course, you know, before we utter words, there's something deeper that occurs, and that's on a loving kindness even. Yeah. There are some pirates out there that are actually pretty decent people. They'll probably kick your ass if you push your luck too far, but but they're pretty Buddha type pirates as well.
Oh, that's all right. I've been kicked before.
Yeah. So listen, that's, I think, about it for today's presentation. Let's remind listeners once again of where they can find you online. Give them the link so they can tune into your show that you, I guess, do present on a weekly basis. I think it's called the Universal Consciousness Show. Beacon Radio? Is that the name?
Beacon of Light Radio. And what you can do, send me a request on Facebook and I'll get you connected so you can see everything that I have on there. There's a lot of interesting stuff on my wall there. And also the three last posts I did was about the books for one thing and also the radio show. And go to my website, and go in under Blogs and Mysteries, and you can see something on the books again, and also the radio show. The radio show will be all over my Facebook page, so you will find there and get connected up, so you can listen to it. Come Monday at 11 o'clock Pacific time, 2 o'clock in the afternoon on East Coast time. And then we are we're going to do another show. We're going to talk about the paranormal.
Oh, you're launching a new show?
No. It'll be just another show.
I see. Yeah. Right. Gotcha. Just to let you know, you actually, all guests qualify for a complimentary WPRPN network subdomain URL. So if you're at all in any way familiar with WordPress, you are welcome to put together a little kind of blog, just kind of courtesy or adjacent, piggybacking off of our main WPRPN.com.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Sure. So it takes about 10 minutes is all it is to throw something like that together with all your key links and just a bit of a blurb, kind of run down who Augie is and projects.
That'd be good. I don't know how to find it, but maybe you could send me a link on that.
Will do. We're going to head on back to the Rogues Gallery end of things here. There's a couple watering holes that we typically frequent. The Scurvy Dog, the Howling Wolf Inn, or the Mossy Wench. I'm not sure if you're up for another hour, but that's what we do. We offer the premium content
available to all Patreon subscribers, as well as anyone who drops in just wanting to be a part of things.
It looks like we'll probably have a few people that'll be joining us there in the backstage area. Do you think you've got enough quantum energy left there in...
I just hang around.
Okay, on that note, we're going to head on over to... which would you prefer, the Scurvy Dog, the Howling Wolf, or the Mossy Wench? Where would you like to kind of hang your hat tonight as we...
It doesn't matter. They all sound like nice animals to me, so that's fine.
Very good. Very good. Okay, well, thanks so much, Augie. It's been, I've had a great time, very enlightening. A lot of really super, talking points and ground that we've covered here. So hope to address a few more topics in the backstage area of things. You stand on by. We're going to
cue up the outro here and talk to you soon. Aye now, thar we be. Having carefully looked over each of our navigation panel instruments, checking every level, switch, knob, and dial, by all accounts and indications, we indeed see it's time once again to drop anchor inside the bay and draw an end to another week of Pirate Radio Podcasts. Don't forget, if you're looking for a little more free-flowing action, we've likely got another great Rogues Gallery after show coming up next in either Google Hangouts or Skype. Also, if you've in any way enjoyed or found yourself benefiting from the shows we've tirelessly produced over the past year and a half plus, you might want to drop by our new Patreon tip jar page and lend a little support. Presently commanding a whole 6 big ones per episode, our unimpeachable longshoreman math skills tell us we're on course this year to set aside around $150 in charity. Help to keep those numbers growing over on Patreon, and we'll be able to extend even more of a generous pirate hand. Be sure to join us again same time next week. Amazingly, we're now booked solid until December, with a whole wide range of colorful guests and show topics, along with what's bound to be a few big surprises. So be sure to drop by WPRPN.com's feature interview area and check out what we've got on tap for the last few months of 2017. If you yourself have an intriguing idea for a guest or story, you can either drop us a line directly over on WPRPN.com or fire us a quick email via PirateOneRadio@gmail.com. WPRPN.com network subdomain links are also now available,
Great for artists, musicians, podcasters, social media personalities, or pretty much just any landlubber. Looking to boost their online visibility, presence, and reach, basic accounts can be launched for only $15 a year. Staking your claim now helps not only strengthen you and the network, we're also looking out for the little guy. That's right, folks. Half of all WPRPN's profits are redirected right back into the hands of the people who really need it most. Community charity. After all, we are the Robin Hood. You can further embark on your own personal pirate journey by liking, subscribing, commenting on, sharing, and following any of our main social media channels via Facebook, iTunes, Twitter, YouTube, Google Plus, or Minds.com. So don't forget to become engaged. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, I'm your host as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Tally-ho!